Dartio Day, the Terraway Northwest London, in conjunction with Kodesh Hemadas Yisroel. Sunday, Rosh Chodesh Teves, 7th day, Hanukkah, 1st of Teves, 25th of December. The Torah, the Need, and an in-depth analysis. Main share by Marina Rav Shlomo Yitzhak, Victor Spanner, Shlita. This week's Torah has been sponsored by Nishmas Pinchas Yosef and Rishmo Zechron Lebrocha on the Shloshim of the late Mr. Paul Levine Zechron Lebrocha, a regular Torah participant and long-standing member of Hennadas for many years. And also by Family Rosenberg on the 6th yard side of Mrs. Hancha Rosenberg, Olea Sholem, Lila Nishmas Alta Chanan Nechabas Rub Menachem Eliezer, Olea Sholem. His yard side is on Wednesday.
Is it disturbing if it's here? Does it disturb?
Okay. So now that the Olam had a chance to go through some of the Mara Mekoymas and how this whole story affected many halachas, many kehillas, and so on, we want to explain a bit. What are the lessons that we can learn from this whole story? So, first of all, let's try to understand what was the purpose of Napoleon setting up a Sanhedrin. So, what we find in the Svarim that speak about it, basically, Napoleon, he was very much involved in the French Revolution. One of the biggest Tainus, one of the biggest peeves that people had, which brought on the revolution, was the fact that there was a huge difference between people. You had the high society, you had the wealthy people, the landowners. They had one set of rules, and then you had the regular people, the peasants and the simple folk, that they had a different set of rules, and people felt that it's unfair. So the people revolted and they said, enough is enough, and they wanted equal rights. And this is sort of the scene, this is sort of the platform where Napoleon came in. Now, that has nothing to do with waging war with other countries, other European countries, and that has nothing to do with many of the things that Napoleon did, which is mainly, he was a general. He was, even today, he's considered one of the most famous war generals in history. And there are still certain tactics that they learned, they study of what he did and how he went about it. Now, you know, eventually he lost. He was exiled. He died as a simple broken man. But nevertheless, it was up and down. It was, you know, sometimes, you know, he was victorious, sometimes not. And there are many ways and many things that you can focus on and zoom in order to try to understand this history. We're going to try to focus on the fact that Napoleon and the Eden, what effect he had. There are many stories, as we said, many legends, many things may be true, maybe not be true. Supposedly, his first exposure to Yidden was in Italy. He was actually born in Italy, and later he came to France. And the name Bonaparte is something that was an Italian name. And he, yeah, this pronounced it differently. Yeah. And Lemaisa, they say that he came to a certain town where, as we know, in Italy they had these ghettos, which is also an Italian word. They also may pronounce it a bit differently. But the point is that the concept of Yidden living in separate areas started in Italy. And he saw the Yidden were not only living in a separate area, but they had yellow stars or yellow things on their arms. And he wanted to know, what is this? And they told him that these are Jews, and they're sort of, you know, kept separate. And right then and there, he said, no, this is stopping. This is not something that we live in. This is not something for the 18th century or it was was the end of the 18th century, and he said, we're not having it. That's sort of what they say. That's how it started. Now, many people think that Napoleon was very good to the Eden, and he was a blessing, and he brought, you know, good and so on. But that's not the case in any way, shape, or form. Now, again, these are things that you read in Svarim, and these may be legends, but there are conversations that he had with his closest people where he did not show any ahava, he did not show any respect for the Yidden. On the contrary, the main reason why he did what he did, which involved the Indian of the Yidden, is because he wanted, as we said, to bring in the concept of equal rights. And he knew that if you have the concept of equal rights, how do you address, how do you go about the Jewish problem? Because Yidden will always be, you know, separate and so on. So there was a very big divide amongst, in the Jewish community, whether we want equal rights or not. Now, it seems that the Erlich Yidden, the Torah Yidden, did not feel that equal rights will be a toive for Klal Yisrael. Because the minute you have equal rights, as you can see from the questions, we put in the 12 questions that the king himself wrote. Napoleon himself wrote 12 questions that he presented to the Sanhedrin, that they should give a ruling on these 12 questions. Now, all of these 12 questions is something that we deal with in England as well. We have what's called British values. These are very much in line with all those things. Basically, what is the status of a get, a kosher get that has been given without a legal get, without a civil divorce? Does it have an effect? May a Yid marry a non-Jewish woman? And may a Yid lend or with ribbis? Maybe he be a lender with interest? All these questions, which was a very, very touchy question. What was the purpose of asking these questions? Because Napoleon wanted to sort of, he had a very interesting mahalach. He said, Azoy, Mamonovshach. He understood that, you know, you have 71 Rabbonim, you'll have at least 72 opinions. Now, if these Rabbonim will be able to come to some conclusion, then I accomplished the fact that I got 71 Rabbonim to come to the same conclusion. But if they won't be able to come to the same conclusion, which is probably what's going to happen, I will be able to use that as a reason why I cannot give equal rights to the Yidden. That is what it says in the Svarim. That was the reason of why he made the Sanhedrin. Because as soon as he became the emperor, and as soon as he became in power in France, he was met with many, many people telling him, don't even think of giving the equal rights to the Jews. Because the Yidden, you know, you can't work with them. This is what he was told wherever he went, by people that he trusted. So instead of doing what Achashverosh did, you know, just sign a document to Lahashver Dahariga La'abed, and instead of doing what many others did throughout the generations, he had a different way of doing it. He wanted to sort of to prove to the Yidden, look at yourselves. I gave you 12 questions. Yes, these are not easy questions. But you'll see for yourself that because the answer to these 12 questions is not that a Yid can marry a guy or all the different things that, you know, what are you first? He was the first one to ask the question, are you a French citizen or are you a Jew? What comes first? Now, this has been a question that, you know, plagued us for many generations. Plagued us in a way because what do we answer? Do we say the truth or do we say what they want to hear? And this is basically what, you know, the kept on coming up again and again. And basically, he wanted to sort of prove to the Jews, look at yourselves, you can't come to the same conclusion. And basically, all these things will exclude you from joining the movement of equal rights. Because if you are not giving equal rights to non-Jewish women to marry them, or a get, that your get is not effective until there's a civil get, the government, all these questions were related to the union of government and being Jewish. Now, Lamaisa, if you go through the answers, he's being very, very politically correct, not saying anything that's against the Torah, but not coming out against that we don't allow this or we don't allow that. Being very, very political, and you know, whether they were taken to task on these answers, there's no proof whether they were taken to task or not. But Lamaisa, it didn't matter anyway, because by that time, things were falling apart anyway, and it didn't really matter much. But let's go to a different aspect. As we mentioned before, there was a very big divide amongst tzaddikim, the tzaddikim that lived at that time, what would be better. And that was more relevant in Russia, where you had many, many Yidden, and he was waging his war in Russia, and the question was, should he be successful, should he not be successful? Now, you can read in the Maror HaKoymos, we brought him from Reb Mendel Ribbonove and from the Alter Rebbe, the Baal HaTanya, where you can see, basically, from page 15 through page 19, there you can see how there was a huge divide. What was the crux of the issue? What was their difference of these tzaddikim, whether yes or not? So it's very, very clear that the question was, what would be better for Klal Yisrael? Should their suffering end? Now, we have to appreciate, you know, we live, Baruch Hashem, in a country where we have equal rights, we make demands, and we get them sometimes. We have representatives in the government, in the council, etc., etc., and we have representatives in the House of Lords. You know, we're very, very well represented in the government. And the government does have to answer to us, and they can't just do whatever they want. So we live with that. Some of us were born with that. And we can't even begin to fathom what it means that people can come and just grab and take just because. And they don't have to answer to you. And, you know, a person can work hard, you know, for weeks and weeks and months, and they finally, you know, gather something, and then the soldiers come, just ransack, loot, do whatever they want, and you don't even have whom to complain. You know, today sometimes it happens, you know, they go around stealing from cars and this and that. So you go to the police, you file a report. Not always does it bring results, but at least you file the report, it's recorded. Then you have no one to talk to. So we can imagine how the manhigim felt that maybe it's time, if we have an option of how to end all of this prosecution, maybe it's time to do something about it. And that is why some of the tzaddikim felt that this is what Napoleon will bring with him, that all of a sudden there's going to be equal rights. You know, now the word equal is very gray, very tricky. You know, equal doesn't have to mean exactly equal, but this can also be equal, you know, as long as it's not all the way off the chart. So, but other tzaddikim felt that, yes, physically, life is going to be easier, but spiritually, what this is going to bring with it is going to be a disaster. And the Metzius is, when did reform, when did it rear its ugly head? In other words, it was something that was festering, and festering and festering. But when was the first time when they came out openly and they changed the Nusach HaTfilah and they had an official Reform Synagogue, temple? That was in 1779. That is exactly at the time of Napoleon when he started with the revolution and with his campaign. Now, is it connected? 100%. Why is it connected? Very simple. We all remember when we were in Cheder in school that kids always try to push the boundaries, right? You always try to push. So what do? You try. You push a little bit. Then you see what the pushback is. You push a little more. And that's how you go through the few years in school, right? That's how we did it in our time. Now, sometimes the pushback is so strong that, you know, it stops. It nips it in the bud. But that's always the nature of people. The reform, they tried, in other words, what was festering was festering. But they tried to push their boundaries by changing this, changing that. And only because there was an air of change and there was an air of, you know, revolution and an air of, you know, things don't have to be the same way they were for the last who knows how many hundreds of years. That is why they were able to get away with the first thing, which was probably the orgel they had on Shabbos. They were playing with a goy, not a goy gomer, a proper goy, that, you know, he played the organ on Shabbos. And that's how they pushed their buttons more and more, and until they literally removed themselves from Klal Yisrael. You know, today the Reform have no shaychus to Klal Yisrael. So lemaisa, this is something with when there's an air of change and an air of reform, that is what it brings with it. So it's not coincidence that the first Reform temple that came out in the open, yes, in the city of Berlin, which was a very modern city and so on, but this has to do with the Indian of Napoleon. So this is what many tzaddikim saw, and they said that even if, let's say, there's going to be a reprieve on the physical aspect, but what it's going to do to our neshamas is something which is terrible. And by the way, there are records of later when there was the big reform convention in Schwengen, I believe it was, they quoted some of these answers. Some of the answers that you have here, which are vague, and they're not 100%, you know, that no, because they didn't want to sort of lose their rights, they quoted those to say that according to the answers, a Jew is allowed to marry a non-Jew, no problem, lekatchila. Because if you look at the answer, it doesn't say outright no. It says, you know, something about, you know, the history, if you look at the way they answered. So this is just shows how things happen. And that's how everything happens in history. Anytime there's change, there's reform, there's something new, it always goes by lowering the bar. You keep on pushing down, noch, and noch, and noch, and then, you know, it evolves. Many of the things that are going on today, you know, with the immorality in the world, which is something that if you look, Rashi says that even the Umas HaOlam were gadur, in they had these gedarim. And then, you know, Bilam came and he was the first to be pirates. And then, you know, we see today how governments sanction things that are also in the Torah. That's only because you keep on pushing the bar lower and lower. And then, you know, if you would go from 0 to 100 in one go, everyone would come out and shout. I mean, there's history here, even here in England, in the 1960s, in the 1970s, certain things were crimes that you went to jail for. And today, it's almost a mitzvah. And this is only because, you know, you keep on pushing, you keep on pushing, and then slowly, that's what Chazal say, Nasas loike heter. What's Nasas loike heter? That, you know, the first time it's terrible, the second time, over Adam Avera v'shonabo is hutraloi. Why? Because the first time you shouted, no one said anything, you know, can't be bothered. Fine, so then you go the next time, and it becomes hutraloi, and then it almost becomes a mitzvah. This is something that, you know, you don't have to be a big historian to be able to see that pattern throughout history, how these things happen. And this goes in every aspect of life. Lahavdul by the Goyim, and Lahavdul al-Falfados by the Yidden. In everything, there are certain things that, you know, are not halacha, but certain things were mamash, kodesh, kodeshim, you wouldn't budge. And today, nishgefeilach. Why? It's only a minig, it's only this. But it's all, always goes very slowly. And only when you look at it from an historic perspective, you see the difference. But when you live it, and you go through it, it goes so slowly that you barely can see that anything happened. So this is the one very important lesson, that it has proven that all these equal rights has brought more not good and more intermarriage and more assimilation for the Jewish people, for the Yidden, than it brought good. Now, Avada, you know, we're not judging, and we can't even imagine living in a different type of circumstance. But we have to understand that this is why many of these tzaddikim were very against the whole concept. Then we have another aspect, which we touched upon before, that what was the reason of his demise? So he had many different times where it wasn't the first time where he lost. But in Russia, that was a very, very big downfall that he had, a big failure that he wasn't able to conquer the Russian army. Now, many say, that's what the Svarim ring down, that he wasn't well prepared. In other words, he underestimated the harshness of the Russian winter, and his soldiers, which he had almost 750,000 soldiers that he had, even though the song goes with only 500 soldiers, but that's maybe when he came back. But on his way there, he had almost 750,000 soldiers, and basically he came back with, compared, he lost many of them, most of them. And so he wasn't prepared. They didn't have proper clothing, and therefore the harsh winters is what killed them. So that is also a very big lesson, because why wasn't he prepared? It's not pshat that he wasn't a professional, that he didn't think things through. The reason is because when a person starts seeing success, it goes up to your head. And people don't realize that no matter what, we are mortal human beings. And we are what Chazal used the Lashon, Yitush Kodmach. The small mosquito was created before us. And even though man has accomplished so much, but any accomplishment that a person, what is the difference between a Gadol B'Yisrael and Lahavdil, a Gadol like Napoleon? A Gadol B'Yisrael, you'll always hear from him, no matter how successful he is, no matter what he accomplished, you'll always hear, Be'ezus Hashem, B'tzi'ata D'Shemaya, in other words, nothing to do with me, I'm a vehicle, the Ribbono Shel Olam chose me, I should be the one, it has nothing to do with me, and it's fascinating to watch, the bigger the Gadol, the bigger is Anova. We've had many Gedolim, even the ones that we were Zoicha to know. Erev Chanukah was the Yortzeit of Rav Shteiman. Rav Shteiman was a huge man. He was mamash, Adam Gadol Ad Ma'od, a giant of a man, and he was so humble that mamash leimachzik tevusa lenafshei. Why? Because the greater he was, the more he understood. How could a human being be so great? A human being is nothing. Elamai, it's all min hashamayim. When does a person start becoming hori and start to think? When be'etzim he's nothing and he knows he's nothing. All of a sudden, he made a few pounds. I'm so successful. I'm so clever. I made a few pounds. So what? Big deal. And then he makes a bit more and a bit more. All he says is, it's all about me. Koichi vo'etzim yodi. A Gadol B'Yisrael, no matter where he arrives and no matter what he accomplishes in his life, he understands this is all the Ribbono Shel Olam. It has nothing to do with him. And this is what makes the whole difference. Because if he would have, Lahavdil, this Napoleon, if he would have understood that whatever Nitzchoinus and whatever victories he had was all min Hashamayim, who says that he would have gone to all these places? Who said he would have done everything that he did? Because that's the nature of a person. You start, you become a Balgaiva, it just gets worse and worse. And that is a tremendous lesson for each and every one of us. As we said before, today Lemaisa, all we have left from Napoleon is that pastry in the patisserie. That's all that's left, if they call it that way. Not in every place do they call it a Napoleon. It has other names as well. That's all it is. Why? Because that's Kachaloim Yov, that's the Indian of Tzeil Oiver, that's what we are. We're nobody, we're nothing. And we live in this world for 70, 80, 90, 100 years, and we think that, you know, we conquered and we did and we this and we that. But we're nothing. What's 100 years in history? How long does it take to speak about 100 years? In a second, you go over 100 years, it's nothing. This is exactly what it is. When a person lives a Torah life, every day he learns, he davens, he does mitzvahs. What does he accomplish? That all these things stay with him. All these things is something that he takes with him. Everything else stays behind. But if someone doesn't have that, so it's all about, you know, his greatness, glorification, his glorification. So, you know, a person dies, and now you have a whole debate. Napoleon was great, was not great. And in his own country, they can't celebrate his victories properly because you have to be politically correct. So there was a whole article in the newspaper how the French president navigated it so cleverly that, you know, he didn't glorify him, but he didn't, you know, make less of him. He just glorified his accomplishments, not the person. All these things. Imagine if after a person, everything he goes through, that's all that you can talk about. You have to be even careful what you can mention and what you cannot mention. But that's what it is. And this, for us, is a tremendous lesson that we have the Torah, and when we learn Torah, we're dovek in the Torah, we are able to do the right thing, and we're oisik in chaye oilam. This is what the Gemara uses, even on other things, chaye shoh, but Torah is definitely chaye oilam. And what does it mean, chaye oilam? Because any gadol b'Torah is celebrated by his chadisha Torah, by what he taught, and what he stood for. That is the chaye oilam, and that you never forget. But when a person, it's all about, you know, gashmizdige things, and all about, you know, building up your name, and all about, you know, becoming glorified, then all that's left of you is a pastry in the bakery. So let us all, you know, take this message to heart and internalize that we should be able to understand what our goal in life is, what our matara is, and what we need to accomplish. This way, hopefully, we'll leave behind more than just, you know, a pastry in the bakery, and we'll be zoicha to all the brachas of the Torah. Chananya ben Arkas Shoim, Rutzak Vishborch, Lizak Zes Yisroel, Tafika, Chibbalam, Torah, Mitzvah, Shneimar, Adinoi, Chufa, Itzlaman, Tzidkoi, Yagdil, Torah, Viyadil. Tal is kalash, Mahir Abba, Yom Ha'ol Yibroch,